Now we're coming to the nuts and bolts of the Einstein Factor. When you experience the power of image streaming, you'll have elevated your genius by leaps and bounds. As Einstein discovered his infamous theory of relativity through a process similar to this, you too will make tremendous discoveries within yourself as you image stream and tap into the power of the Einstein Factor. There are music breaks placed strategically at important parts of these exercises, so you may absorb and reflect on the images that Wynn is guiding you through. You may wish to go to your guidebook that came with this program so you can record and build upon your genius insights. Make this the multi-sensory experience it's meant to be. As a reminder, do not practice any of these exercises while driving. Be sure to practice them when you are in a comfortable and uninterrupted space, such as your home, office, or home office. During these exercises, you'll need to maintain your focus specifically on the descriptions of the powerful images that will enhance your Einstein Factor through this amazing process called image streaming.
So now, finally, you're ready to image stream, your most direct path to finding your own inner genius. You need to find a blank tape, or you need to find some human being willing to listen to you for a good while. Please find that tape or that person and arrange as soon as possible today, at home or at your office, to do your first major session in image streaming. Use the instructions I've just given and the ones that are still coming to generate your own image stream and pick up on whatever comes into your awareness with the tape recorder running or that person listening, and to describe in detail whatever does come. It may be richly textured images, or it might be just a flicker of something. If you can pick up on that flicker of something and describe it, more will come. You'll be seeing more, and you will have much more to describe. And the more richly you describe, the more richly you will see. Here are some methods for making your image stream more vivid and useful. Use the present tense. Remember that third commandment of image streaming, use the present tense. Even if the image has already vanished, you should never say, "I saw such and such" in your description. Always phrase it, "I see such and such," or "I am now looking at such and such." This image stream is self-reinforcing. It's developed by a feedback loop. Almost any stimulus will serve to trigger the stream of images, but from that point on, your own flow of verbal description is what keeps the image stream going, what keeps your images developing. In general, the more you describe something, the more of it you find to describe, the more of it you see. I want you able to image stream without any special props, able to consult your inner images for insights under all kinds of conditions. This tape is just to help you get started and is only one of many resources for doing so. Soon, you should be image streaming much better without this tape even than with it. You've been asked to try image streaming, preferably with a live partner as listener, or recording on a blank tape as you go. This present tape is your third recourse, using my voice to create an impression of someone there with you as a listener. You can describe whatever experiences come to me, this voice on the tape, treating me as your listener. The special music on this tape will also help keep you reminded of me being here to listen, help keep you reminded of needing to continue describing your experience and your observations, help keep you reminded of what you're doing no matter how deeply you might explore and how far you might range. Let's see if we can get those benefits started flowing for you on this occasion now, in this experience. Get your image streaming started and to the point where you can later do image streaming on your own without me here to
find
help
a comfortable and uninterrupted place. And let's begin.
So let's start with a deep stretch.
Take a deep, rewarding stretch. Get every inch of your body in on that stretch.
Ah. In the afterglow of that stretch, settle back into a deeply relaxed, comfortable position. And let's brighten that afterglow like you would brighten some glowing embers by moving air through that afterglow. Resume your velvety smooth breathing. Let your velvety smooth breath stroke all of your body like a long, sleek strip of silk or velvet. And bring up more of that relaxing afterglow from your stretch. Bring up that afterglow in every part of your body by stroking it with your velvety smooth breathing. And keep on building your deep comfort and that afterglow with your velvety smooth breathing. Each breath, if possible, even smoother and stroking more rewardingly and deeply than the breath before. And instead of going looking for specific images, just relax and let them come to you. And all you have to do is notice them starting to happen and then describing them to me. Instead of going looking for images, just relax and let them come to you. Just work on building your deep comfort and your afterglow warmer and richer in every part of your body with each next breath in your velvety smooth breathing. Work on the breathing, build the afterglow and the comfort. The images will come. Just notice when they do. Just work on your breathing until then. Keep on with this deeply comfortable breathing. Don't try to see the images. Just notice when they come and start describing them to me, whatever they are. Just make that next velvety smooth breath even more deeply comforting. What was in your awareness just then? Please describe it to me. Describe as many details of it as you can, whatever it was. Good. Continue. What more are you noticing? Good. What more do you notice than what you are seeing, feeling, touching, tasting, smelling, hearing? Please continue describing everything you can to me. What more do you notice in what you're seeing, feeling, touching, tasting, smelling, hearing? Please continue describing everything that you can to me. good. What more do you notice in what you're seeing, feeling, touching, tasting, smelling, hearing? Everything. Please continue describing everything you can to me. Good. Thou hast come fully to here and now. Bring yourself fully present. Bring yourself fully alert and feeling maybe remarkably refreshed, remarkably clear after this experience. And yawning and stretching as we come fully alert. Yawning and stretching. Fully alert and present and feeling terrifically good. And now to debrief, as called for in your workbook. You want to jot down on a notepad everything that you can recall of what you experienced on this experience of image streaming before you play back the tape. You might then want to play back the tape after you've made some notes and then use that tape to enrich those notes. You might want to pause this tape now, or even turn it off for a moment, giving yourself 2 or 3 extra minutes to complete this experience. Let's try another image stream now, this time staying in the present tense, picking up on whatever comes. See what effect this has on the immediacy, power, and clarity of your experience. This is why it's okay to fudge or make up, at least at first, parts of your description. This fudging is a legitimate imaginative process, feeding back to the unconscious, blending with your more spontaneous imagery. Much like the deliberations of an artist or novelist, this fudging is guided largely by the unconscious, even though it appears to be subject to your will. Likewise, this use of the present tense feeds back to the image stream, making it more immediate, more durable, more available. Try another image stream now, this time staying in the present tense. See what effect this has on the immediacy, power, and clarity of your experience. You might want to pause this tape while you put on the blank tape to try the image stream. As you practice image streaming, you'll find that certain images are naturally clearer and longer lasting than others. In what is perhaps more than coincidence, such images also happen to be the ones that are most beautiful and enticing. Let instinct be your guide. If you're drawn to an image, go with the flow. Hold on to that image for a while. The attractiveness of that image interacts with your attentiveness in yet another powerful feedback loop, reinforcing your ability to generate ever stronger mental imagery.
All of this can be summed up in a three-part principle of description. When you describe any object, real or imaginary, at the same time that you are observing it, the very act of description focuses your attention in such a way that you perceive more and more detail about the object being described. So that's the first part of the principle of description. Describing any object, real or imaginary, at the same time you are observing it. This builds and you see more of what you're describing. The second part is that describing an object aloud to an external focus, such as a live listener or to a blank tape in a cassette recorder, is the strongest way we know of so far to build this additional discovery effect, where you discover more and more about what you're observing while describing it. The third part is that the more sensory your description, and the less abstract and explanatory, the more powerful the effects, especially when you're describing abstract or complex situations, as distinct from concrete ones. If you can stay sensory in your description, and stay with the sensory details, and have to explain little or no part of it, just go with the sensory describing, it's much more effective for you. For now, let's just say that this principle lies at the root not only of image streaming, but of genius itself. Working on your image stream, never forget that your ultimate goal is to achieve a completely spontaneous flow of uncensored, uninhibited imagery, not unlike the free association that psychoanalysts encourage in their patients. At a certain point in your practice, you'll no longer have to struggle and strain to get an image. Instead, you'll be surprised by the abundance of images, their startling clarity. Only when this happens have you truly begun
Richard
to
Poe
image stream.
Was senior editor for Success Magazine, one of the world's best entrepreneurial magazines. I had occasion to suggest to Richard that he try image streaming, which he did, and was so very pleased with his results that he ended up co-authoring The Einstein Factor with me. Richard includes here one of his own image streams, uncensored and unedited, to give you a better feel for how this procedure works. Here is Richard's unedited account of one of his recorded image streams. He said, "I see a kind of background of greenish-yellow fuzzy spots, like the spots of a jaguar or a cheetah, all over a black background, shimmering. I move closer to them and they get bigger. I'm zooming in on them. The spots are getting bigger. The black spaces are in between. And I see that indeed it is like the fur of a jaguar. I can reach out my hand and I can touch it. And I can feel the smoothness against my hand. And I can see the cheetah's head. It's really a cheetah, not a jaguar. There are the spots of a cheetah. It turns to me and I can touch its head. I can feel its ears and their floppiness, the rubbery floppiness, and feel the drool of its mouth as I stroke it all over its head, and it looks at me, regards me warily, not warily, but in an accepting way, as if I'm part of the cheetah family, and looks over at the savanna, perhaps looking for game, and we are on the African savanna. The trees are very sparse. I can look out, and there's a water hole out there with zebra, wildebeest, and a bright sunlit scene, a grassland that stretches out over the horizon. The wind is very hot against my skin, and I feel at one with the cheetah. We're together, and we belong together, and I'm not a stranger in this place, and we're hunters together, surveying the herds that are out there. And I'm just feeling the wind. It's very hot. It's high noon, I think, in tropical Africa, and the sun is very severe. It's burning in the sky. I can't look at it because it's too bright, but it's almost directly above us, and it's just burning and blazing. It's so bright that the sky doesn't really look blue. It's kind of a sickish yellow, and I have to stop to make neurological contact with the scene again.
the wind and the sun and the great expanse, looking out. I don't find an answer to my question. My question, of course, is how best to approach the writing of this book. As I think of that, the sky seems to open. A great figure, a man, I think. I can't tell if it's a man or a woman. It's a woman with dark hair and a bodice. Her hair tied up in a fashion and dressed in a fashion that evokes for me Renaissance Italy. Her hair is dark. She looks Italian. She's middle-aged, I think. I think of one of the Borgias, perhaps or one of the great Renaissance families of Italy, that she's one of them. Royalty, perhaps, or a countess. And she looks at me with very piercing eyes. I can smell the perfume that wafts from her, the scent in her hair. I don't know what to call it, but it's a basic scent like frankincense, something old and unsophisticated, something that would have existed in that day. Behind her is a room. She's still standing with her hands pushing back the torn edges of the sky from which she emerged, and behind her is a room, and it's musty in the room. I'm going past, I'm going into the room, and the air is musty and close, very warm. There are beakers and flasks and bottles, and there is an alchemist kiln, an athanor made of brick, and there's a fire. It's glowing very hot, and the hot wind blasts me, and I'm sweating because it's so hot. It was hot in the African savannah, and it's hot in this room. Very close and hot, and I look down into the fire in the athanor. I look deep into it, and I see a baby, almost like an embryo, curled up within the fire, and I know it's giving birth to something, of course, but what's in the fire? I look at the baby. It looks more and more like an embryo as I look. The sweat is pouring down my face, and I feel that it's purging me and that the poisons are leaving my body as they pour into me. And I can smell the burning fire. I can smell the fire as it heats the brick, a pungent smell. And I can hear it roaring within. I can hear the power of the furious heat inside of it. As I look deep into the hot part where it's burning, it's all glowing orange and bright, and purplish flashes dart through it, and I see something like a ball, a purplish ball. It's like a crystal ball. And when that ball bursts open, the answer will lie within it. It's growing black and gnarly, and it's seething like an egg, like a reptilian egg with something in it. It bursts, and of course, a dragon, a black dragon in typical medieval form, with wings, and it stretches its wings, and it flies out from the earth off into space, and it flies out into the galaxy, into the solar system, between the planets, and I'm riding on its back out into deep space. That's one image stream. In this instance, an image stream in answer to a question, clearly spontaneous, unedited, and leading in unexpected directions. It's vital to let the images evolve in unexpected directions. The more surprising or unexpected they are, the better the chances are that you're getting them from the further reaches of your mind, beyond the narrow walls of your consciousness. Those further reaches where we can find your Einstein factor.
Now that you've learned to image stream, with practice, you'll be able to make your image stream more vivid and useful and truly reap the benefits of your Einstein factor. In this session, Wynn will introduce you to several in-depth techniques to make your image streams even more powerful. Wynn will also teach you how to deal with the squelcher that he talked about in session one. And now, here's Wynn.
In all of this, to this point in the course, I certainly hope that you have in fact tried out those first experiments in describing and have had at least one go at actual image streaming. This is a lot of information if you're only listening to these tapes. It all falls into place and makes easy sense for you if you actually do these experiences. Whether you're part of that happy 70% of those who are hearing this who get their images easily and already have gotten images in your first try at image streaming in this course, or whether you are part of that 30% for whom conscious image streaming has not yet ignited for you, I have some more suggestions for you these next few minutes to make image streaming work for you and to work more strongly for you. Image streaming is so uniquely valuable, I'd like you to consider even teaching it to a friend so that you can practice it together and explore it together, or teaching it to other people generally. Each of the following suggestions can be used to help you make the image streaming experience stronger and more effective for you, and also to help you teach this invaluable resource to others. If you're among that 30% who so far have not managed to get image streaming ignited for you, you might already be becoming discouraged to the point of deciding that I'm just one of those people who can't get images. Well, I got some news for you. In fact, no such people exist. Everyone can visualize. Until 1973, I myself was one of those people who stubbornly maintained that they were not visualizers. Only through an intensive regimen of training and experimentation, which included formal instruction in things like auto-hypnosis, was I at last able to get pictures. But once the images did start flowing for me, I very quickly found myself to be fluent. No one hearing this has to go through what I did. The fruits of my 30 years of research and struggle are fully contained in this course. In the remainder of this tape are listed some of the most powerful techniques that I've discovered. They will help you break through blocks and start your image streams or deepen your image streams. Since these techniques were compiled and perfected, a process I completed in about 1982, we've only had 3 people with extended difficulty out of all the 10 or so thousand people that have trained in image streaming to have any difficulty with that. Here is one of the suggestions, using beauty, because beauty is the native language of the right brain. Nothing more than beauty will reinforce visual thinking more directly or powerfully than experiencing or working with beauty and wonder. Begin your image streaming session maybe by recalling the most beautiful natural landscape that you've ever seen. This might be a forest, a babbling brook, a garden, or a sunset over the ocean. But it should be a real place, not an imaginary landscape. Pick one that's most beautiful for you. Then you can focus your attention on recollection rather than fabrication, and then you can draw on latent memories about that scene that you've stored and probably forgotten for years. As you go deeper into the description, your mind will wander and start generating perhaps seemingly unrelated images. When you catch any image coming through, go with the flow, pick up on these new images, and describe them. And here is another easy way to get imagery started. Stare at a fairly strong light source, such as a 40 to 60 watt bulb, definitely not the sun, but some strong light source, and stare at it for maybe a half minute or so. Then close your eyes and describe the after image of that light source. This after image soon begins to change colors, shape, and position. New images will appear. Keep describing whatever you see and you'll soon drift into a full-fledged image stream. Strong visual patterns such as stripes, polka dots, and checkerboards will also create after-image effects if you stare at them long enough. A variant of this method is the phosphine technique. Gently rub your eyes like a sleepy child and describe the lights and colors that result from that changing pressure of your fingers. Another suggestion is the recall of an old dream. All of us have had unusually vivid dreams that stick in our minds. Some of them we may remember all our lives. Try image streaming from one such dream. Go into that dream, recall it as best you can, describe it as vividly as possible in its original narrative sequence. As with ordinary image streaming, don't worry if you have to fill in gaps by fudging a little bit and making things up. If you keep on describing everything that happens in the present tense, as if you were looking at it now instead of recalling it, you will soon find yourself looking at real-time images of what you were describing. At a certain point, the dream will take on a life of its own, resuming where your memory left off and completing itself in your consciousness. You may even rediscover the dream's original message or ending, which you may have forgotten or repressed a method for building or strengthening your image stream, called the story method. You can build an image stream from any good, entertaining story, novel, film, or TV program. It should be a story that you have read or encountered very recently, or one that remained vivid in your mind. Begin word painting scenes, that is, to paint such descriptions in words of those scenes that it's like a picture. Begin word painting those scenes from that story that were not described by the author. As your description picks up speed and intensity, you will start free associating into a more genuine, independent image stream. Another way of starting or strengthening your image stream is what I call the Fantasia method. This technique stimulates the synesthetic response more directly than does any other technique. Listen to some richly textured music with your eyes closed. Experience has shown that French impressionistic music, much classical music, especially from 1750 to 1825, and progressive jazz are among the most effective for the purpose. Density and complexity of the music are key factors. You want to make sure there's enough music per unit of music, so to speak, enough music per unit of music to activate your more sensitive faculties. Such music will stimulate visual images as pleasing and fanciful as those that appear in Disney's Fantasia. Another technique for starting or strengthening the image stream is what I call the blindfolded grope. Some of you may orient more to the sense of touch than your other senses, and so you might get better results from this blindfolded grope. One form of the blindfolded grope is to blindfold yourself and walk around your house feeling different objects. Describe at length the appearance of each object you feel. Another variation is to have someone put together a mystery grab bag of diverse objects for you. Remove and feel each object in turn, describing as you go. Another blindfolded way of bringing on your image stream or strengthening it is eating or smelling blindfolded. This method helps involve the much neglected faculties of taste and smell. Blindfold yourself before eating. While you eat, describe in detail every sensation until an unrelated image stream begins. Another variant is to select 4 or 5 spices from your kitchen with a range of pleasing aromas. Set the spices in a row before you. With your eyes closed, shuffle them around and then try to identify each one by smell. You may be surprised at the intensity and diversity of the image streams the odors conjure up. Smells are particularly effective at evoking long-forgotten memories. Here's yet another technique for strengthening or bringing on your image stream. Close your eyes and start sculpting with your hands some object of art out of thin air. When it's finished, hold this imaginary sculpture in your hands and describe it in detail to tape recorder or listener. Making a real sculpture out of clay will also work. Like the blindfolded grope, this technique may work better for more tactile readers. Each of these blindfolded procedures are ways of stepping up demand for visual function without occupying your visual circuitry with external scenes, and so this increased demand for the visual component helps you become in better contact with the unconscious visual processes.
Here's another one to reach.
We call this one the commuter special. While riding in a train or bus or car, not driving, mind you, just riding in a train, bus, or car, close your eyes and start describing from your imagination the landscapes and street scenes you think that you are passing. Don't be embarrassed to describe the scenes aloud. When other passengers see your tape recorder, they'll assume that you're a high-powered executive dictating letters. This is a great way for busy people to convert downtime into a mind-expanding experience. Here's a favorite way of mine that really brings on nice imagery. Imagine that you're walking in a meadow. I call this tree and cloud. Imagine walking in this meadow and find yourself going up a hill with a single immense tree at the very top. Engage all of your senses here. Exult in the warm breeze, the sunshine on your face, neck, and shoulders, the smells of the meadow, the muscular pull of walking up a gradual slope for a long time through the swishing grass. Consider the variety of wildflowers, the swish of your feet through the grass, and the sound of your own breathing. And when you reach the top of the hill, lie down in your imagination, lie down in the soft, cool moss at the base of this tree. Look up the tree's immense trunk. Look through this tree's branches at the sky, where clouds are scudding across an azure expanse. Notice how the movement of the clouds creates an illusion that the tree itself is moving, along with you and the hill moving. Now drift with that movement. Let it take you wherever it will. Here's another projective exploring technique for bringing on imagery. We call it beneath the boat. Imagine riding a boat onto a gentle lake. Peer down into the water, past the sparkle and the ripples. Try to make out what's down there. At first you see only the play of refracted sunlight across the bottom, but as you peer more intently, a whole underwater scene, a whole underwater world takes form for you. Your own imagination will determine whether you see submerged Atlantean civilizations or fabulous sea creatures. Describe whatever you see in rich detail. Here's another favorite that's called the time-space method. It's a version of the technique that led Einstein to his special theory of relativity. Recall from session one that Einstein spent 10 years of his life trying to imagine what it was like to move at the speed of light. You can try something similar. Imagine yourself to be some sort of electromagnetic or gravitational phenomenon like a radio wave, a laser beam, a quantum particle, or even a black hole. Imagine yourself moving across deep space between stars, between galaxies, into the unknown. You don't have to be a physicist to achieve profound insights through this, but boning up on a few popular science books will help fuel your imagination and enrich the experience. Move through space until you come to something. What is it? Move through until something emerges in your awareness and describes it. Here is maybe the original form of image streaming. It came about because when I first learned how to get images myself, I wanted to teach others the value of visual thinking. And I found that some people were not getting it by the techniques that I had learned to think visually with, so I asked my own visual thinking what would enable this person or that person to be able to get to their own visual images and work with them. And one of the very first things I was shown was how people searching their images would be moving their eyes under their eyelids. You could see that movement. And I noticed other things about that too. And I was reminded of REM sleep, rapid eye movement, which is what we do in our dreams. And I realized that here was a clue to helping people who had not consciously contacted their images to do so. So here is the live partner feedback method, also known as the helper technique, for bringing on image streaming. This does involve the use of a live partner. It's based on the assumption that you really are image streaming all the time, but simply aren't consciously aware of it. Your partner's job is to help you become aware. Use the normal procedure to start image streaming, including the velvety smooth breathing technique. Instruct your partner to watch you closely as you image stream. Here are 4 instructions for your partner who is to watch you closely as you image stream. The first instruction for your partner is to look for attention cues. Attention cues are these tiny indications that something has caught the image streamer's attention. A momentary pause in breathing is a giveaway, especially when the person is practicing velvety smooth breathing, where he is supposed to be breathing continuously. It means that he has reacted to some inner stimulus, such as a striking mental image. Another good clue of an image attention happening, an attention cue, is eye movement under the lids. When the image streamer's eyes are closed, what could he possibly be tracking? It can only be mental imagery. Remember that you're looking for real eye movement, not just a mere flutter of the eyelids. So when you see an attention cue, you alert the image streamer as follows. The instant that you spot such a cue, alert the image streamer by asking, "What was in your awareness just then?" When in doubt as to whether you really saw such an attention cue, go ahead and ask anyway, it can't hurt. What was in your awareness just then? The third rule is to persist. It may take some persistence to get some image streamers to realizing that they are image streaming, even after you've cued them a dozen times. Be patient. Persist in this process until it takes. And the fourth rule for guiding an imager into image streaming with this helper technique, at some point the image streamer does finally catch on. He will announce with great excitement that he's just got an image. Maybe it's a tree branch, or a leaf on a branch, or a couple of grass blades, or a brick walk. At whatever that point is, you take on a new role as your partner's tape recorder or coach. It's your job now to coach your partner to continue describing each image in present tense and in rich sensory detail. Keep reassuring the image streamer that it's okay to keep describing for several minutes, even if the image flashed for only a second. But don't get in the way of the flow. Once he's going, keep him going. Don't interrupt him. To encourage the flow, you can remind him maybe that it's okay to fudge a little and to make up details, but usually you won't have to. In the flush of excitement from his first real image, the image streamer may well have forgotten these liberating principles and will benefit from timely reminders of keeping in the present tense, staying with sensory detail. This leads us to another feature of image streaming which is so very rewarding, and that's to do, in effect, co-tripping or co-image streaming with a live partner. This leads us to the very special feature of working with a live partner, whether with image streaming or with other Einsteinian discovery-type processes. It is so much more rewarding to work with a live partner than it is even with a tape recorder that I do strongly recommend at every and earliest opportunity rounding up someone to be a live partner and exploring these experiences. At the very least, you need a tape recorder that represents a potential listener, but above and beyond a tape recorder, it's so much more rewarding and interesting and involving and productive to work with a live human being as a partner. And one of the features that can be done with this live human being is both of you image stream at the same time while being an audience to each other. This is a slightly more advanced technique, and undertake it only after both you and your partner have become fairly adept at image streaming. But sit down facing each other and both of you close your eyes. Each of you should then start describing to the other your respective images. Instead of waiting to take formal turns, you want to get as much describing into the time available as possible, because the more describing happens, the more experience happens. So when one of you pauses for breath, the other rushes in with his description or her description. Don't allow any empty airtime to elapse once you are underway. The game-like quality of this exercise is an excellent catalyst for image streaming. It'll rapidly sharpen your imagery and your descriptive powers, and the content of both your sets of imagery will be fascinating. Once you've opened contact with your image stream by whatever means, you may want to test and explore its limits. The further you push your powers of perception, the stronger your imaging faculties will become. Here are a few further developing exercises and experiences. These and many other similar procedures not only build up your imaging muscles, but actually increase the apparent size of the imaginary space in which image streaming takes place. By carving out a larger panoramic stage in your mind, you free up your mind to create ever more elaborate and exhilarating dramas. For example, this is one developmental process called the panoramic scan technique. Very simple. As soon as a clear scene comes into view, begin panning your view slowly to the left, like your head was the camera, and your verbal description the videotape. As you turn your head, what new details of the scene come into view? Slowly turn completely around. What do you see behind you? When you have completed a 360-degree pan of the entire scene, you'll feel a much more realistic sense of standing in three-dimensional space in this scene. Similarly, we have the expanding senses technique for developing your imagery. Vision, of course, is the strongest of all the senses, and you tend to probably rely on it disproportionately. Practice describing your image stream using your non-visual senses extensively. For example, touch is probably the most important non-visual sense. Explore the different surfaces in your imagined scene. Feel the bark on the trunks of trees, the roughness of a brick wall in the sun, which, by the way, also has an unusual characteristic smell. You can remember or imagine the smell of bricks in the sun as well. The dew-fresh grass underfoot, the grain and sheen of fine wood furniture, the texture of plush carpeting. Also valuable for this purpose are warmth and coolness, moistness, atmospheric feel, sense of space and motion, and mass and lightness. It also helps develop your inner perceptions to free up your point of view. You can change your spatial point of view by moving around in the imagined scene, describing whatever comes into view as you move. You can also go back and forth not only in space, but in time. Try changing the time of day. See what that brings into view. Try changing the time of year, or the century, or the millennium, and see what that brings into view. You can even change your physical size in the scene that you're examining, growing larger to take in more of that scene, or smaller so that you can get into little portions of that scene to examine them more closely, growing larger or smaller like Alice in Wonderland. Explore in all sorts of ways to discover additional means to perceive even more detail in your image stream. The more you describe, the more... This leads us to two further principles, one of them the Da Vinci principle, and the other one we call the Whitman-Blake effect. For as you practice these techniques, you may no doubt discover many tricks of your own for opening the image stream. Your own methods may work even better than those I've suggested here. There are no hard and fast rules, and indeed a cardinal principle of image streaming is that it doesn't matter how you get the images started. What matters is getting them started, and once the stream starts flowing, let it take you where it will. It transports you swiftly to the precise psychological space in which you most need to be. I call this the Da Vinci principle. Psychologists today know that virtually any stimulus, such as the meaningless ink blots of the Rorschach test, can set off a train of association that will lead rapidly to the most sensitive places in your mind. Leonardo da Vinci discovered this principle 500 years before Sigmund Freud. Unlike Freud, da Vinci didn't use free association to seek out his deep-rooted complexes. Instead, the great Renaissance man of 15th century Florence free associated his way to artistic and scientific insights. It was the basis of much of his genius. "It should not be hard," wrote da Vinci in his notebooks, "for you to stop sometimes and look into the stains of walls, or ashes of a fire, or clouds, or mud, or like places, in which you may find really marvelous ideas." Da Vinci also found inspiration in the sound of bells, in whose clanging you may discover every name and word that you can imagine. Some people around you may not yet be practicing the techniques that we've been describing here, but you're nonetheless in good company. Da Vinci pointed out that cynics might find some humor in his new device of finding inventions in the mud. It may appear trivial and almost ludicrous, he wrote, but the method is nonetheless of great utility in arousing the mind to various inventions. More good company. 200 years ago, the poet William Blake penned 4 lines that to me embody the essence of image streaming. To see a world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wildflower. Hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. Walt Whitman echoed the same idea 100 years later when he wrote that one may see the universe in a single blade of grass. The tiniest stimulus will indeed provoke thought storms and reveries without limit. Through a process I call the Whitman-Blake effect, your limbic brain works its synesthetic alchemy upon the raw input of your senses, transmitting it into genius. Pause before making your next big decision. Look around and notice the slight irregularities of the ceiling, the texture of brick underfoot, the feel of your knee bending and straightening, and the slight shifts of sensation in your shoulders, stomach, neck, and face. You can't really explain why, but when you widen your neurological contact with the world in this way, you feel stronger, wiser, and more creative, and you choose more wisely. Image streaming, of course, amplifies this effect 100-fold. When you master the techniques of these sessions, you will have acquired a powerful microscope through which you can indeed spy worlds and universes in the tiniest sand grains and grass shoots of your mind.
Session, you'll learn about one of the most critical aspects of the Einstein factor, feedback. When you examine the information you've gathered through image streaming, what is your next step? What can you learn? It can all be contained in your portable memory bank, an invention of Wynn's that he states is probably one of the most important discoveries he's made. He now shares this discovery with you. It's simple, but will have a profound effect on your genius ability. With this program, you've been given your own portable memory bank to get you started on the path to tapping into your own discoveries and your own genius. You'll also hear of a powerful discovery Wynn himself made that is revolutionizing learning today with the power of his portable memory bank.
Hi, this is Wynn Winger, and it's good to be with you. Together in this session, let's explore something of the issue of feedback, which is really one of the keys to this whole matter of the Einstein factor and to actually a lot of other things as well. To begin this discussion, let's look again at our friend Albert Einstein. When Einstein was a student in Zurich during the late 1890s, he often partook of sailing excursions on the Zurich Sea. One of his early companions, a young woman named Fräulein Markwalder, later recalled Einstein's peculiarly unsociable behavior during these outings. She noted that every time the wind died and the boat lay becalmed in the water, Einstein would immediately pull out a notebook and start writing, oblivious to his companions. But as soon as there was a breath of wind, the notebook would vanish and young Einstein was immediately ready to start sailing again. What was Einstein writing in his notebook? Perhaps we'll never know. But far more important than what he wrote is a question of why Einstein wrote. It can hardly be an accident that researchers in the field of high intelligence have long regarded the habit of compulsive scribbling as one of the telltale hallmarks of genius. In the 1920s, researcher Catherine Cox studied 300 geniuses from history, such as Sir Isaac Newton, Thomas Jefferson, and Johann Sebastian Bach. Her exhaustive survey of available biographies revealed a pattern of strikingly similar habits and personality traits among these top achievers. One sign of genius, Cox noted, was a penchant for eloquently recording thoughts and feelings in diaries, poems, and letters to friends and family, starting from an early age. Cox observed this tendency not only in budding writers, but in generals, statesmen, and scientists. A casual trip to the library will confirm Cox's finding. Apparently fewer than 1% of the population habitually engages in writing aided thoughts, experiences, and perceptions, whether in journals, diaries, letters, or books. But with startling consistency, the world's top achievers nearly all seem to fall within that critical 1%. At the library, you will notice the vastly disproportionate amount of autobiographical material written and published by history's most gifted men and women down through the centuries. Among them, Benjamin Franklin's famous autobiography, Einstein's autobiographical notes, and Leonardo da Vinci's voluminous notebooks, filled with sketches, diagrams, and cryptic writing. Thomas Edison produced some 3 million pages of notes and letters before he died in 1931. The question is, does genius lead to scribbling, or does scribbling lead to genius? Why did these gifted men and women start keeping diaries in the first place? Was it because they knew in advance that they would someday be famous and wanted to leave behind a record for future historians or for posterity? Was their writing simply an irrelevant byproduct of a highly expressive mind or a highly inflated ego? Or, and this is the point I'll argue here, was the scribbling in and of itself a mechanism by which people who were not born geniuses unconsciously nurtured and activated a superior intellect? Here is an ancient secret. In a famous scene from the 1959 film classic, The Nun Story, Audrey Hepburn and the other postulants line up to receive small leather-bound notebooks. "For the rest of your lives," says the Mother Superior, "you will examine your consciences twice a day and write your reflections in these notebooks," quote unquote. For Audrey Hepburn, the diary proves a burden. Her mind wanders as she writes. Perhaps she would have been more diligent had she been privy to recent neurophysiological discoveries that suggest this ancient spiritual practice may harbor potent secrets for enhancing brain power. For example, for years, gerontologist David Snowden of the Sanders Brown Center of Aging at the University of Kentucky has been discovering an obscure community of nuns living in Mankato, Minnesota. Like others of their order, the school sisters of Notre Dame, the sisters of Mankato live an unusually long life. 25 of the 150 retired nuns in the Mankato convent are over 90, and a few have passed the century mark. Of even more significance, they are remarkably resistant to the usual brain diseases afflicting the elderly, such as Alzheimer's, stroke, and dementia, which strike the sisters of Mankato far less often, less early, and less severely than they do others. What is the secret of the super nuns? Snowden intends to answer this question. 3 years ago, 678 Mankato sisters agreed to donate their brains for Snowden's study. So far, he has collected 95 brains. When his study is complete, Snowden predicts that a large portion of Mankato nuns will show an unusually rich growth of interconnections between neurons in their brains. Old age and diseases like Alzheimer's tend to block and shrivel these pathways, but if you have more than enough to spare, your brain can use the extra dendrites and axons to bypass damaged areas.